Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 433. I'm your host, Steve Raker, quietly building my podcast-busting armor with the help of my Scooby Gang, WWX Kevin, my War Machine, and Andrew the LA Rabbit, our own Happy Hogan.
Wait, I thought I was Robo Dugan.
One of these days we'll be the Howlers at some point.
Robo Andy.
I promise. And I promise you can be Robo Dugan.
Never forget, Steve, all those stories. He was just a robot.
Yeah, chasing Godzilla. Marvel Noise is a semi-monthly podcast sponsored by nobody, but we're happily part of the Deliberate Noise Network, who keep the lights on for us, although they've been flickering lately. And check out our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, where we get to talk about the indie books that we're reading.
The lights are also flickering.
It's like when you go to Marvel Unlimited and you click on the wrong file and it says, nope, Hydra has this file. It cannot be found.
All right, before we get to this episode's recent reads roundtable, I want to bring up an item we've brought up the last few times we've talked. And I finally, maybe we can make this a bookend until Andrew finishes the game, because I finally just finished it up. And that's the Midnight Suns video game that I played on the Xbox. And I finished, which I was very proud of myself, because I'm not often a video game finisher because of either the difficulty of the target, yeah. The targeting. You know, like the speed of targeting and whatnot that you have to do in some of these Tomb Raider-esque type games. Or I just get distracted and then the rhythm of the gameplay and like the plates that you have to keep spinning in the air, like I become lost from, and then it's like I gotta almost do like the tutorial again to remember how to get back into it, you know?
So, and it's not even like the new games, like some of the like retro games, I'm like, this is just, I just can't pull off the move. I can't go to that place and then go to the other side of the screen and then run down. I'm like, it's just not able to do it.
I and can't make the jump.
Like, I remember something like Metroid Dread, like literally I would have to play every day, because if I don't, I'm like, I'm not going to remember all the button combinations and all the complicated things you had to do in a certain order. I'm like, I gotta play every day. I'm like, I'm not going back to the tutorial.
In my post comic book reading, when I took my like high school comic book sabbatical, and also wasn't really playing video games at those times, just into sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all that stuff that you should be into if you're in high school in the 80s and in the USA, I got into playing tabletop games with my buddies, you know, beer and pretzel type games. And the turn-based games were, you know, developing out of what had only really been like Dungeons and Dragons type of stuff, right? Games Workshop was dead and we were moving on to Wizards and all these other companies, and that was expanding on what had been built. And I really got into Blood Bowl, which was a turn-based Warhammer universe football game. And I really got to enjoy the over-strategizing and not having to worry about necessarily quick reflexes, because we were dulling our reflexes with intoxicants and stuff as we were hanging around doing our high school and college buddying. And so I really like turn-based even video games, and to this day, because I don't have to do the fast stuff. So late at night, which is when I usually get the opportunity to turn on a video game, if I don't want to play a game of Madden, I look for something like a turn-based, and this really fit the bill for me, because it's the superheroes, it's the Marvel, and it's turn-based. I didn't necessarily totally dig the card deck.
No.
Aspect of it, but I got into it because once I realized, all right, there's only 8 cards per character, so the cards are coming up pretty regularly, I started to get into the rhythm of that, and I was enjoying the gameplay of the missions, so to speak.
I found for my own, not finished, I'm about halfway. We did get the DLC, so started on the extra content.
Oh, cool.
Part of the issue with all, there's all these pluses and minuses that are never adequately explained. Like, what does fast mean? And what, like, so you'll have all these stats that show up, and I never know what fast is. And I guess resist means you're less likely to suffer a negative. Like, there's just a ton of buffs and negatives that
totally get
were
that.
Never really explained. And it took me quite a while to figure out the point system for how the cards work. And right. I just thought it was a I guess if you're a card game person, it's different, but I don't know none of that stuff, you know?
Well, yeah, that stuff I got the hang of as I was going with the buffs in particular. And again, I go back to my first love with the Blood Bowl. I was excited as in the last 20 years or so to see that they've made video games of Blood Bowl too. But the problem is the turns have a timer. So you're under duress to try to get all your moves in before the 2-minute clock buzzes, and then your turn's over either way. And I really don't like that, because that takes away what
the whole point of turn.
The turn base, right? So in this game, while you're waiting to make your move, if you hover over each of the characters, it'll make a list of if they have fast or resist or whatever, and that's where you get the explanation. So I wouldn't use those as a strategy, like, oh, if I just get a resist or a fast, but once it was happening to me, I could go over and look at the character and see at least what it meant. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just didn't like... I just feel there's this flurry of all this stuff.
Yeah.
And at no point is it ever explained what any of them are. I guess you hover over it. I like it because my wife and I play together. So a lot of times one of us is taking a break or whatever, going to get a glass of water. Like, you just don't have to think about anything. You just go do whatever you like. And that's the part that's the most fun to me.
And what you said the last time, I totally agree with. There really were too many resources to, like, maintain.
Yes, and figure out what they all do. And
there's like these little colored essences that are scattered around the landscape that you, not during your missions, but during the in-between times where you kind of can run around like it's a free roam world, you have to go and run into them like Pac-Man hitting the dots, right? To like collect credits and attack essence and all these things. But what I didn't like, Andrew, was they would respawn these essences after a mission. So you would, after a mission, the routine would be you'd like run around the whole place and go to every little nook and cranny that has a, one of these little things to collect them. Then you go to bed, in air quotes, and start a new day. And overnight, those essences respawn again. So in the morning, the first thing you do when you get up is you run around, you do the same. So you're doing you run around to every nook and cranny of this place, and then you hit a button and it like counts to 10, and then you do the exact same thing again. And I thought that was kind of a monotonous routine.
Yeah, but what's nice for having two of us is there's lots of different skins and everything.
Yes.
And while the game was expensive, you have it all. So you don't have to do additional purchases. So it was fun, you know, for us to go through and look at all these different outfits and color schemes and everything.
Totally.
And so we've wasted hours of time fiddling.
I usually don't do that kind of thing, but I found myself doing it too. Like, oh, you could make Ghost Rider be the old Ghost Rider. Oh, you can do this or that. And I thought that was
fun. Turn them purple. It was a lot of fun. Plus, as all modern games do, your own avatar you can really go to town on as well. So that's always a nice additional thing when they're like, oh yeah, you know, like your face and your nose and your hair and all that. So yeah, it's been fun, but I don't think if you're not a Marvel person, I don't think it would be for you. The Marvel hook.
There's a lot of lore and conversations and stuff. And fortunately, about a third of the way through, I found out that if you just hit the B button, you can like, you can go through the dialogue captions, and it just like runs through those conversations a lot faster, because I don't need the explanation of like why Blade and Morbius don't like each other. You know what I mean? Like, I pretty much get why.
No, we've been letting it play out because it's nice, because Lisa and I discussed how to reply. Like, we're playing super nice, so we have to be, you know, like, what do we think Magic would like to hear?
Yes,
here?
Totally.
Well, she's a little gruff, so maybe a joke. Like, there's only three options.
Right.
But it's fun if you want to engage in that.
Or what gift you're going to give them.
Yeah. So I felt like that was kind of a fun, because they all have their comic book first appearances.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, there's a lot of, like, I thought, fun, silly inside stuff that I enjoyed playing with.
And Kevin, you get Ghost Rider, Nico, who is super powerful, Captain Marvel, Blade, Iron Man, Doctor Strange, Magic, and Spider-Man. And then along the way, you add Captain America, Wolverine, Scarlet Witch, and then if you have the DLC, you get Venom, Morbius, and Storm, and then right at the end, you have to fight a whole bunch of times, but then you get the Hulk, which is kind of fun. So it's a pretty good array of the darker Midnight Suns type characters, Avengers, and then X-Men too, between Wolverine, Magic, and Storm. So it's a fun roster.
No Hellstrom?
Yeah, no.
No Dr. Druid?
He'd be redundant with Strange.
I guess so. That's like that other comic recently. Well, we were looking for Dr. Strange, but we're going to settle with Dr. Druid instead.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thanks for the vote of confidence.
Yeah, but then when they get to Kunlun, what does he do? He goes off and, like, he's no help.
Yeah.
I didn't even see those dragons fighting.
I'm going to go study the ruins instead.
All right, so that was, I guess that could be my first opening salvo to our recent Reads Roundtable. So let me spin the bottle to somebody else.
So I get my negativity, but maybe not negativity out of the way first?
Sure.
I dropped Avengers.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know. Jed McKay confuses me now. I don't know.
Hey, I thought you were. Yeah, you were not that long ago, weren't you? Digging on the Black Cat and some of the other titles he was doing.
Yeah, because I kind of was sort of working out with Super Steve before if it was a team thing, if it was a solo thing. Because Black Cat was really good. So, I don't know. He was sort of like co-writing some Spider-Man stories before.
I never finished Iron Cat, Kevin. Should I go back and grab the rest?
I mean, Black Cat is fun.
Moon Knight was his best book, and he made it an ensemble book. And I think reasons why, maybe.
Well, I think that works better than the Avengers, but I still, I mean, it didn't have all the problems that the Avengers has, but it has the thing where, like, you might be counting time and pages and stuff like that, which is really weird, because the last Avengers issues, this is where I turn it around. Even though it was the last issue I was getting, the last issue I got was probably the best issue since the first issue. So I'm like, I don't know. The characters, definitely the villains we were fighting, could have been more interesting. But if, like, all the issues had been written like issue, what is this? Issue 11, which is also drawn by Ivan Forelli, I would have been still on the book, because it's funny. Like, you have all that, like, decompression, or I don't know if, like, if you're timing it, I'm like, I don't know if I'm getting my value here. And then issue 11 comes along, and it's like a classic issue, and it has all this stuff in it, and I'm like, where is this guy? Like, he obviously he can write different ways, so I don't know. It was just very strange to read that last issue that I was getting, and then to, like, have all this stuff in there and go to all these places, see all these characters, have, like, a solo story that's, like, a done-in-one, and but you still have stuff continuing in the background. It was very strange. Like, I really enjoyed that issue.
Maybe you need to shift. Like, maybe it needs to shift over.
Two or three issues out of 11, which I thought were really good or whatever, isn't enough to, like, keep me reading the book.
Yeah, maybe you need to just shift it over to checking it out on Marvel Unlimited in hindsight, and then, checking out, seeing if it's characters you dig in or whatever, and if so, you explore it. If not, you swipe left, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do that, because, you know, with the other run, I know there was people at Jason Aaron's run, they're like, I can't make heads or tails of this, and I was just enjoying the craziness and all the stuff that was going on. So now it's my turn with Avengers going, I don't know about this. But it's just funny, because that's also the reason I didn't pick up like the Blood Hunt too, because I was like, I don't know if that's gonna work out, but I mean, it seems to have won over well, so I don't know. Like, I guess I got to figure out which mode Jed MacKay is in before, like, I pick up another book now, because, I mean, I know he can write both, and then one of them I enjoy a lot more than the other.
All right, Andrew, what do you got?
Well, I've likewise been doing some thinking, Super Steve, and thanks to your recommendation, I am the owner of a proud new comic book reading device.
Ah.
So, well, I had been using a lot of cheap tablets. One from Verizon, and then one that was like, a $200 one from RCA or whatever. And so I'd had a lot of mixed success with I have the DC and the Marvel and then other digital services too. And I was just like, it's pretty frustrating. You know, it locks up a lot. It doesn't work. And so decided, why don't, you know, you were like, just maybe spend more than $1 on your device, Andy. And I was like, oh, okay. So I got like the big fancy iPad thing. And you want to know what? It really works. I mean, you don't have to maybe go this crazy. Maybe you want to go in between. But those tablets that cost nothing, like, you might have some problems with them. Just my experience alone. They're a little bit dicey. That being said, so I've been catching up. So you're the Philip Kennedy Johnson Hulk.
Ah.
I started with that, and then I kind of stopped picking up the floppies. But these new comics look really well on these devices. Like, the older ones, I still prefer paper. But then, I don't know what year, but if you find the one on these things, check it out, man. It's really good. I completely recommend it. It just, I don't know. You've always talked about it, Steve, how well all the colors and everything pick up, especially because, let's be honest, sometimes when you're buying the comics, there's print variation.
Sure.
And no. Particularly if it's a dark book, it can get pretty rough and muddy and all that. So I was really glad that this is a chance for those kind of, you know, space books or any Venom books or whatever. At least I know I'll be able to see them. So I really liked. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Remember the day when the lips, the red on the lips, never lined up with the lips?
Yeah, like Out of Register, I think, was always charming, and because I'll associate that with my youth. So I'm fine on that. But this was. But what I liked about the Hulk was, I thought I would have liked maybe all the artists were good, but I don't know that they worked handing off to each other so much.
Mm.
But I did enjoy, I think it's the right amount of Hulk in the Marvel Universe, but not in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
So off-brand Ghost Rider, Man-Thing, you know, just nice. We're in, because as you always say, Steve, we like these for the shared universe.
Right.
But I also don't need him smack dab in the middle of every big dang event that's coming down the pike every three episodes, you know, or every three issues. So I like that. I feel like I'm in it, and I don't really care if this Ghost Rider is new or an old one or whatever.
He's definitely cool.
Yeah, it's a fun character. I don't know. As I get older, the continuity is as much a benefit as it is a hindrance. As I get older, I understand why DC did Crisis. Like,
oh, brother.
As this hits 60 years, whenever they try and pull something really old, you're like, wait, but that reminds me of the 45 years of continuity since that moment. So don't be too clever pulling those old strings. But anyways, I thought the whole team did fun. Hulk fighting monsters and magic is a good combination. They bebop right along. I recommend it. And it looks so pretty on the fancy electrical device. So thumbs up for reading. Maybe I'm really trying to make a push to stick more digi. I mean, I have some paper comics too, but hoping this is a trend for me.
That said, the color palette on that Hulk book is fantastic too. Those issues with the Ghost Rider where they're on the Indian reservation and everything is red, sepia, fire. It's just a nice, it's a nicely put together produced book. That's for sure.
Yeah, and it matches against all those night scenes too, because the blacks are really black. They're not whatever. It doesn't get that muddiness when it's radiating out. So yeah. Big thumbs up reading it on the machine.
Nice. All right, here's my gripe for the episode, since Kevin got his gripe out of the way. I read some, and I'm not always so good at keeping up on like the latest comic news and all that sort of business, particularly hype and solicitations and stuff. But I did see a news story about some of what came out of the recent Marvel Retailers Summit. And, you know, I'm a reader since Marvel Comics were still only 25 cents, you know. Right on the cover, they would have it in the big burst.
Still.
And Buckley was touting a need to return to, like, consistent, predictable, stable pricing and price points for their realtors to, or retailers to be able to work off of, you know? And he said he had some kind of line about how most of the line is going to be $4, right? $3.99, $4. But a select few that have the best creative teams on them are going to be $5. As well as the annuals and the specials and the new number ones, that kind of a thing, right? But then the tally that I saw on this article that I was reading from Bleeding Cool, which I guess you could take with a grain of salt, but the article had a tally that listed the last 2 months and showed that there were far more $5 books than $4 books on the schedule. So most of the line isn't $4, and it's hardly a select few that carry the $5 price tag.
They're still working on it.
Yeah, I guess it takes a while, right? But also, speaking of number ones, Buckley also says they realize they've been making it tough on marketing and on their line editors by canceling ongoing series and then pretending that they were going to be limited series afterwards. And, you know, he had some kind of comment like the days of a title reaching 500, you know, maybe out of reach, but we would really like to see a title make it to like 20. Like, well, talk about lowering the bar for success or for what you think a title with legs looks like. But the outcome was something about now approving books for 10-issue runs rather than for 4 or 5-issue runs, where then they can pull the plug and say, oh, it's just a limited series. And I guess this kind of falls more into line with making comics more like television series, right? I mean, this sounds like a Netflix series where you're going to get 10 episodes.
Oof.
And tell your story and it's going to be done. And I feel like that just happened. I just experienced this with the Blade book. And that I talked about last time we had a recent Reads Round Table, that I was thinking like, hey, this Blade book is actually pretty good. I'm not usually a sucker for Blade, pun intended, but this one's pretty entertaining, the kind of the quest that he's on. And that title just wrapped up with issue number 10 and the last couple of issues, although it resolve the story, they were pretty lackluster, so it kind of ended on a whimper. But you know, maybe this, we're going to be seeing more of these 10 issue limited series.
I think you mean 20 issue now.
Yeah, well, that's what he's shooting for, right? That was his hope. Like, we can't hit 500, but maybe we can hit 20.
But that Avengers issue I talked about, Steve, was 777.
Yeah, that's a lot of comics.
And if you look at the Marvel Unlimited series, those digital series that no one talks about, they're like hitting the hundreds now.
Wow.
Figure out the numbering on those things.
Yeah, that was way too much in there to unpack, Super Steve.
Anyway,
it's a lot. It's hard. I'm dumb, so it's hard for me to track when they keep. I wouldn't mind something like a series and a volume number, something like volume 10, 1 through 10, volume 11, 1 through 10. Yep. Just something to make it clear about what's going on, because I like to batch read these things, so it's nice to know, especially if you're on the Unlimited and you're like, oh, let's wind the clock back and read a bunch of FF or event, you know, just sit and read a chunk of this thing, because that's what I also have been doing. And it's nice when they're all, it's clear like what's going on. I mean, I guess that's why they put the dates in, but it's just, man, there's a lot of series out there that have very similar names.
And I thought it was worth mentioning right after you were talking about the digital comics, because that's what it's kind of leading me to, is that like the Marvel Unlimited is really turning into the best deal in town.
It's one of the best deals in town. I don't know if it beats like the Viz Media deal, but it's pretty close.
$80 for the year. It's not too bad.
And the distinguished competition, I think they're only a month behind on posting too. So
what?
I thought someone was saying that. I usually read older books on there, so what? I'm not reading anything current. I'm all like, oh, look at all these Jim Aparo Batmans.
Yeah, right.
Using this for now.
Someone can correct me, but I believe that you pay more money and you get stuff earlier.
Oh, there's Marvel like a doesn't tier have that system. Kind of model. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure basic tier, but yeah. Like I said, I'm there to sit and eat a chunk worth of fun, exciting, old-timey, crazy DC business.
I mean, Marvel certainly, with certain books, has bumped it ahead, and then sometimes you have to, like, it's weird. Like, I don't even figure out, like, where they're going. Like, some stuff is 6 months, and then, like, the Spider-Man Gang War, it's just all of a sudden, it's available now, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I went back and got caught up. Your boys are right. You were like, just read the thing. So I went back all the way to the Goblin business, All Hallows Eve, Lady, and all that stuff. I went way back a few years to that, because that was kind of fun, and I think that's a really great character design.
I was gonna ask you, do you think that character is getting a lot of traction and they're popular? Like, I know Marvel's has a series for them. They got an action figure early, but do you feel like they're popular?
I don't know, but I do know. I feel it. I feel there's a bit of that design thing, like I felt with, not as much, but like Spider-Gwen was a good design too.
Yeah.
And I think when you nail that visual look, and I think that's a lot of it right there. Because I really liked it. Super positive. To counter with a super negative, whatever the heck they've done to Dracula with that goofy armor is the exact opposite of my idea of a eye-catching design look. So I don't know what it is. You know, you need a fashion person, but when they get those looks and those designs down, I think it's ripe for, I'm interested. I just want to read that thing and look at it and with the right artist. It's really good stuff. So I'm glad I read that. Didn't care for Spider-Man and alternate dimension stuff they sandwiched in there.
Yeah.
Always feels weird, especially JRJR when he did all that stuff with Captain America in the alternate dimension. And, you know, he's so awesome drawing children, too, which they always cram into his books. I'm like, what do they, like, take into account your artist? And I always feel, and I just, yeah, so that felt like, we'll give kids and take them away really quick, and won't you? And then, you know, I was totally devastated that Kamala Khan is dead, so she's going to be my Captain Marvel, guys. I'll be looking back on that death 30, 40 years from now, wondering what they could have done with that character if they hadn't cut it off. But, yeah, and then the gang war was lots of fun. But you guys know I've liked those characters since Superior Foes.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see a nice turn on Janice, the new Beetle.
Hallows Eve was back in Amazing Spider-Man the last couple of months. She's a couple with Ben Reilly, who is still alive. And
yeah, Chasm, or is he still going under that name, or was that a different Chasm? Clone?
He's like lost all his Chasm? He's lost all his Peter shared memories.
Yes, and, that was the whole thing. And yes,
and his girlfriend is Hallows Eve, and they get this, they're in therapy with the Goblin Queen as their therapist. And of course, she doesn't want what's best for them, right? And there's some kind of thing where she's gonna hook Ben Reilly up to a machine and make things worse, but he thinks that it's gonna make things better. And Spider-Man and Betty Brant have to come and try to stop it from happening. And he doesn't want to be helped, and he wants to do it, and they don't want him to do it, and so it's a big back and forth and everything. And I thought Ned Leeds was dead too. I can't keep track of these characters that keep coming back.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought he was the Hobgoblin and died in the mid '80s or something.
Oh, he was never the Hobgoblin.
They retroed that out. Wait, was the
Roderick Kingsley?
Roderick Kingsley, yeah.
But he was but his mind was wiped too, and it was like it's crazy.
Do you not remember that limited series? It was like the Hobgoblin Lives or something, where
I do.
Like Roger Stern came back and says, "This is who I really planned it to be." And maybe if you would have stayed on the book, because this character we saw like one time or whatever that turned out to be the Hobgoblin didn't actually turn out to be that great of a reveal. But
right, you know. I mean, that's it. It was hard enough for me to wrap my head around the actual thing that happened, and then for them to retcon it, and then it's even harder because I, whatever. But Spider-Man,
I mean, it's fine now since he's had way more appearances. But I love tracking down those back issues, and then it was Ned Leeds. It wasn't. Now he's dead, and all that stuff. It was just. I mean, I just love that character in that era.
And somehow Wolverine's involved. I'm like, hey, what?
Exactly. But it's weird that I don't feel any, like before when I used to see the Ben Reilly stories, I'd be like, oh boy, here we go with the Ben Reilly. I kind of feel that way with Kane nowadays, but Ben Reilly, I'm like, okay. Like I don't feel weird about it or like angry about it or anything anymore, but I can't help but always wonder every single time, what do Ben Reilly fans think of this? Like I can't put that out of my head, because he's just had so many weird things, and I'm like, is this what they want? I mean, and they have like some weird, total weird relationship, or like, what if all I am without my memories, what if without Peter, I'm just a bad guy? And I'm just like, that is weird, but also, I don't know.
Why is that?
Say strangely comforting.
Yeah, why is that your default too? Like, why? Like, you know what I mean?
From the 90s, it's got to be dark and edgy, guys. Come on now.
I know.
Wait a minute. Full stop, though. Kane is still alive? Oh.
Is he ever dead?
I don't. Jeez. All right.
The one I'm surprised that, I guess, is more. I thought we had that splash of popularity and faded, but I guess Venom's here to stay as a mainstream. At all those events, and I guess he's still a big deal. I thought that was a, hey, we're gonna wheel him out and then maybe put him away. But I feel like he's everywhere.
I think it's Son of Venom now, though. Isn't
it? Yeah. Well, sort of. I mean, There's so many symbiote stuff and everything. It's just like, I feel like they've been doing Venom or sort of Venom for like at least 20 years.
There was an anti-Venom costume skin in the Midnight Suns for Venom.
Yes.
Although that's not really Venom.
Venom has a big role in that one too. Yeah, I was just surprised everywhere I look. I'm like, oh, I guess Venom's a big deal and going to be a big tentpole guy.
And Black Widow's a Venom?
No.
You're not supposed to say anything negative.
That's it. I'm not reading Avengers anymore.
Well, you know, I saw, like, maybe I wouldn't normally pick up, like, a Hawkeye, Black Widow, Venom series. And I was just like, you know, I probably don't really need to read this.
Yeah.
It's okay. I buy enough stuff as it is.
That's good for the Marvel Unlimited. That kind of thing is perfect for that.
Yeah, I think so.
It's weird. My paper purchases are all the weird, mostly the legacy stuff, because that Power Pack, the June Brigman Power Pack, just finished up that 5 issues. I'm reading the JM Shadow of the Goblin Spider-Man one. I'm liking they're bringing back these old people to, you know, play around with some of these characters set in weird continuities, all the Secret Wars stuff they did and everything. It's been fun.
Nice. But all the new stuff, those are the titles I definitely need.
Come on, cute little corn.
Like Marvel Meow or any like weird books like that, I'm like, I gotta get the paper for that.
The Shadow of the Goblin has the corner box guys. So 2 has the Goblin in the, like, a classic Goblin in the corner, like a Steve Ditko-esque Goblin head in the corner of it.
Nice.
Such a fun, really. Michael Saint, Michael Maria, Sta Maria is the artist. Not familiar, but really detailed work. And, you know, JM really gets into characters' heads and has a good grasp on the history. So it's perfect. It's about kind of the fallout of all the bad stuff the Goblin's done and sort of how it kind of keeps echoing out, which is sounds like a JM book. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
Did you remember the proto goblin, though, is the question.
Ooh.
I can't afford those kind of first appearances, Kevin.
Okay.
Is Spider-Side still alive?
I don't think so.
All right. True. At least one of them is gone.
I mean, I don't think anyone cared about Spider-Side, right? I mean, someone cared about Adam X. So maybe someone like, they really, really dug into Spider-Side, and they're like, once I get my opportunity.
It's hard to believe that one Secret Wars issue, like, if he hadn't gotten that costume, thousands of characters wouldn't have been spun out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Literally.
And we would have never known that they had existed previously in Vietnam, and the government had been using the symbiotes all along.
They're reprinting all the Secret Wars as those facsimile editions, and they're gonna collect those facsimile editions into like an oversized like gallery hardcover.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm like, if you already had the collections and everything, but of course none of these collections have ads and letters pages and everything. So now you can rebuy all the collections again to look exactly like they did back then. I'm like, it's
just a facsimile of a collection. Now I see.
Well, Kevin, you want to get it on the new worst paper that they use.
Yeah. Oh my god.
That's why you're gobbling them up, right? To get that terrible paper that Marvel loves.
It wrinkles.
I feel like they're going to do every single version, and that's the next version they're going to do, where it'll just be someone's bad copy they found off register on the newsstand, and they're literally just going to scan in the issues and go, now it's even closer to the real one. We even found some old paper.
Oh, you know I'd buy that. You're joking, Kevin.
Artisan edition.
I feel those the DC ones use different paper, the older, like the Golden Age reprints. I've been gobbling those up, those, you know, first Wonder Woman and first Poison Ivy and all that. I love that they use a different paper for the insides.
Yeah. Well, it's not supposed to be glossy paper for that, for the facsimile reprint anyways. I think it's probably going to be closer to more like Masterworks paper where you don't see that shine on it.
I read the last couple of issues of Star Wars and enjoyed them, because I think the Star Wars books overall have kind of been in the descent after the Droid Wars thing, before like they get kind of cooking again. And Star Wars issues 44 and 45 are the first two issues of I'm not sure how many issue arc, but it's the beginning of the trial of Lando Calrissian. Right,
which
is bound to happen because Charles Soule is the writer, right, and he's a lawyer, so there's bound to be a trial. But fortunately, it's not like bogged down with procedural stuff or anything. The artist is Madabek Musabekov.
Oh, that's because he retained Matt Murdock, yeah. But nobody knows he's really Daredevil, Steve. That's the key.
And like the deal is that Lando once traded some rebel intel to save his friend Lobot by giving a droid that had secure data on it to Jabba the Hutt. And plus that whole thing on Cloud City where he, from Empire Strikes Back, where he, betrayed everybody to Vader, you know?
And was there ever a Hi-Bot?
Right now there's the... they're in that in-between Empire and Return of the Jedi time frame, so Lando hasn't helped destroy the second Death Star and become a war hero for the Rebels yet, so he's, like, expendable. So he really is on trial, and they first considered just chucking him out an airlock and being done with it. Leia wasn't exactly jumping to his defense. He got a lawyer who's snazzy, and they have some funny courtroom moments with Soule's, experience in that environment. But it's fun. I thought, surprisingly, the Lando and Lobot miniseries that happened a few years ago was one of the best Star Wars books to come out of Marvel. It was just a really good story where he was like having to save his friend and unplug him from the grid and try to save him as his personality is slowly degrading in his like battery powered, because he's with it not connected to the power source because of all his brain transplants and everything. And the one time I went out of my way to meet Charles Soule when he was at a con, at one of the Baltimore Comic Cons, that's what I went up to tell him. That, like, you know, dude, that story was, like, did you have a relative that, you know, had a dementia or an Alzheimer's or something? Because there was a lot of really touching caregiver-y stuff that Lando was wrestling there, and no, he hadn't, but it was just good writing. And this was kind of the outcome of the events of that happening, where now he's got to pay the price and he's accepting it. He confessed to the crimes, and which is making it hard on his lawyer. But the trial of Lando Calrissian in Star Wars 44 and 45. Not bad.
Yeah, I think 45 is going to be my last paper issue, Steve. I was buying a bunch of the Star Wars, but I think I'm going to move to Digimon for those things as well.
Whoa. Yeah.
They're good, but I bet you they look pretty good in digital form too.
Yeah, and I don't know if they look $5 an issue good, so. Although I don't know if Madabek Musabekov counts as the top tier artist for Marvel, but the art was good. It looked good, and the dude didn't go out of his way to try to make everybody be like an exact likeness. Like, I could tell Lando is Lando, but you know, he wasn't a traced over photo or anything.
You know, the other thing about that $5 bit, if they told you, hey, it's going to be an extra dollar and we're putting that money towards the creative team, maybe you would feel different about the price of comics.
Well, how do the creators feel, do you think? To be like, oh, I guess I'm not one of the top tier creative teams we're not a $5 book? Or like, hey, if you're charging more for my book, shouldn't I be getting more, you know, all that business? Like, I don't know. It seems like it was a weird dynamic to make public.
Yeah, it is. But I guess that's you don't often hear about this stuff all the time. And then it's a sort of like retailer level.
Yeah.
So.
But I don't go chasing down the news, and I heard about it, so.
Well, there's good. We had a big one of our prominent stores locally is closing, moving online, and a few other ones not in my area, but not close. Not that close. I live in a large metropolitan area, hence the L.A. Rabbit. But
you're from Louisiana. Yeah,
a bunch in. I think that was the person that had the L.A. Rabbit on Twitter way back when. But a bunch in Santa Monica had closures. We had the store Earth too. It's they won an Eisner like 20 years ago. They're wrapping up business. So
they didn't have a podcast.
It's a hard time. I think that's what drove them out was the podcast. No, I think a lot of these places, once if you have an online presence, I think it's tempting to be like, you know what? Why are we, you know, we can do all this stuff online. Yep. Yeah, we lose a little bit of money, but we lose overhead too. No rent, yep. No extra employees. Let's just live online. And so I would go. I didn't buy. It's not my regular shop. I would go there, and I have bought comics from them. And I am sad to see any business go. But
yeah.
On the other hand, I get it. Like, it's hard. It's hard with rents are high, and they're in a pretty nice district. So I'm always like, it's got to be difficult. And because your store can't be huge, you can't have the kind of inventory you can have when you go online and just have, you know.
Everyone's online, though. Back.
But yeah, because I did go to a free comic book day, and they just had long boxes. There was $50 mystery long boxes.
Wow.
One guy bought one and got angry that he didn't like what was it. Like, it's a mystery box, man. Like, and also it was 50, but like, they didn't say this, but I'm thinking, you're paying $50 for a long box. Dude, it's not all AF-15s. I can tell you that much. I don't know what you're expecting, but, you know. I mean, I don't know what was in. I assume they didn't just fill it with the same. You know, you go through those long boxes and you'll see like 40 copies of the same issue. Or I assume it was different comics, like not just, hey, it's X-Men number 2, a long box full of them or whatever, but all different covers. But no, so yeah, it really is weird how. So I fished in the three for, I went in the dollar bins and the three for a dollar bin. So bought some classic books, boys. But sadly, they were mostly 70s DC. And the Topps, Roy Thomas, Steve Ditko.
Oh, nice.
Herbieverse book, one of those. I'm like, I wasn't going to buy anything, but I saw that. And I'm like, oh, I got to find two more comics. So I grabbed some 1976 DC. God, it's so good. Bob Haney. Underrated. But that's the wrong podcast. I'm sure Mike is going to fine us now for...
This is Marvel noise. This is Marvel noise.
Yeah. Have you ever tried guest starring on a DC podcast?
I wonder if
they put feelers out and then you're like, hey, I know a lot about DC.
I wonder if Haney ever worked for Marvel.
He seems a very DC guy.
Yeah,
he does. That's why I'm like, I don't.
Company man.
Man, yeah. that trim, thin bat. Like, I'm an Aparo Batman, but his Batman looks pretty good, boys. Yeah, I picked up an Aparo Aquaman. I just can't. 33 cents? How can you say no? You can't. Oh, and dollar books, man. Everything that wasn't this week, the new releases, all the recent releases, all dollars. So
why didn't you send me some of that stuff?
I picked up a bunch of nonsense, some Fearless Dawn and Batman Dylan Dog and stuff like that. Hey, that's like a $6 book or something for a dollar.
That is a thick book.
It is. I'm not saying it's not worth it. I love that stuff. It's so weird to actually read that, because I have some of it from, but it's all in Italian, so I can't read it. So it's weird. I'm like, oh, this is what he's like. I've only flipped through the Italian ones where it's like, I don't understand no Italian. So it's just choose your own story. But those OG Dylan Dog books, boys, they're pretty nice looking.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Maybe they'll do a Marvel crossover.
Hey, Kevin, with your trust in Jed McKay wavering, have you been reading the new Moon Knight book?
You know, the funny thing is, I've been stacking it up now. so I haven't actually got back to it. Isn't that funny?
So I've done the same, but I, because we were going to get together and talk comics, yeah. I jumped into it. Right.
I looked at that stack because I had a Spider-Man stack, and I'm like, what am I going to read, the Spider-Man stack or this Moon Knight stack? And I actually chose a stack of Spider-Man because I actually was reading that Web of Spider-Man one shot as well. So, I mean, that was a lot of Spider-Man to get through. So, yeah, I didn't get through the Moon Knight.
Well, I won't spoil anything, but I did read the first four issues. It's Vengeance of the Moon Knight, and it's the same creative team as the last book. It's Jed McKay and Alessandro Capuccio. And the covers so far by David Finch and Paratore.
Am I crazy? It doesn't look like, I guess I have a certain look for Finch, and it doesn't exactly look like.
No, these are digitally painted, it looks like.
Yeah.
I'm saying digitally, just guessing. But yeah, it's all, I mean, it's colors by him and everything too. But Moon Knight's dead, right? So this whole Vengeance of the Moon Knight, I thought, oh, it's going to be like Hunter's Moon is going to be the new Moon Knight or whatever. But it's not. It's that, you know, this awesome supporting cast that McKay put together in the Moon Knight book just carries on and carries the book themselves. They're carrying on the mission of the... pun unintended. they're doing the job at the Midnight Mission. In Moon Knight's name, but a brutal new Moon Knight does appear, and it's like, is it him, or is it like an adversary because he's being hostile? Is it a character we already know?
I think it's Azbat's Knight.
And no, yes, and yes are the answers to those three questions without getting too into it. But, you know, you got Tigra, you've got the two vampires, you've got Hunter's Moon, 8-Ball is still there. It's a motley crew, if I've ever seen one. Each issue, too, has been focused on a different one of the characters, like, from their point of view. So there's, like, been a Tigra issue. I forget the girl's name, Reese, who's the, like, secretary vampire. And yeah. Hunter's Moon has gotten an issue. And the soldier guy, who's also a vampire. So... it's been interestingly laid out as far as the pace. I mean, I've just got my box of popcorn out, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes next. This is still a great book. It's a storyline change. It wasn't a creative team or direction of the book or characters in the book change, even though they did a whole new number one. So...
that's the difference between your 10-issue, 5-issue, 20-issue run. Like, maybe they tell you it's 10 issues, and you're like, oh, I'm going to write a story for 10 issues. But Moon Knight seems like it's a regular ongoing series that's building and building. And I guess at any point it could have been canceled, like if things didn't go well. But it seems like it's just like, maybe we'll get canceled, but we're just going to go for it. And, like, yeah, it can be devastating when those don't work out. But man, I love when people just go for it.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like when they did the Brubaker Captain America death before Bucky became Captain America, and it was like, it was just the supporting cast was carrying the book a little bit there. It was like Falcon and Black Widow and Bucky, and they were all just sort of carrying their weight and dealing with the aftermath and trying to continue on the mission. So it's fun.
I got something fun and exciting.
Lay on me.
All right. I'm back in the Ultimate Universe.
Oh, boy. Peach Momoko time?
I'm writing my fan fiction. I'm like the doctor with the hat from that other universe.
The man with the yellow hat?
Jeez. I don't have a yellow... coat. I don't have a monkey
yet.
I'm not Mr. Peanut yet. But yes, it's Peach Momoko time. Because, I mean, those one shots are fun and everything, but it's not like there was like an ongoing title. And I'm like, I don't know if you can get, like, that's the thing. Like, I don't know what Marvel's like arrangement. Obviously, there's translation and all that going on in between. But, like, you can do your off-to-the-side one-shot or whatever. I think that's, like... I mean, it is the Ultimate Universe, so it's not like it's the main Marvel Universe where there might be more coordination, but this is still a universe. So you can, to some degree, probably, like, lay down the terms and when you're building, like, your own universe or anything, but this is in a universe. So I'm like, oh, I wonder how this, like, ongoing story that could technically tie in or do something, like interact with someone else's book, how this is going to go down eventually, right?
Yeah, they might have to invite her to a retreat.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, there must be some extra bit going on here, right? I mean, we all saw the map. I don't know if you, did you see the map, Steve?
I didn't see the map.
Andrew, did you see the map?
What is the map? Is it of the Ultimate Universe?
The Gang War map? In Spider-Man?
No, there's a map out there of this new alternate universe that the Maker had made.
Okay.
And like Japan is like sort of like this own area type of thing.
They call it Peachland.
Yes. So this felt very different. And I would say that's a good thing. Like if it's the Ultimate Universe and you're just gonna try to do the, like, I know you're in a way you're trying to recreate that, but also not recreate it, because if you're just gonna do the same thing all over again, it's just like you're never gonna be able to recapture that. So I felt like that Mark Millar series was pretty different. I would say this is as different from that series as you can get. And we really only get, like, one character here, Armor.
Yeah.
But I really like the teaser they had in, I think it was, like, the Ultimate Universe one-shot. Was it called Ultimate Universe? Something like that. But, yeah, this...
You've been going Ultimate. Kevin, I've been buying all the Spider-Man 2099 minis. So we're both reveling in backwards nostalgia. But go on.
But in a way, it's forwards. Like you could say, yeah, it's the Ultimate Universe, so it's backwards. But I can't think of what I would compare this to, unless I just said, hey, it's like some kind of manga or something, because it definitely has a different feeling than everything else.
It's written by somebody who grew up reading manga. You can sort of definitely tell, right? Like it itself isn't manga, but it, you can tell it's from that world.
And it's also, I also wouldn't say it's like those American manga things. Like I would say even those are different than this.
Agreed.
Hey, people love the Spider-Man one. Isn't on like fifth printing or whatever. So they found something there.
It's got a ways to go before it can reach the Void Rivals reprints.
Yeah.
But it's on its way. And I also get that feeling of like the Legion TV series where it had like that the creepy Shadow King guy. Like I don't know if the antagonist here is supposed to be the Shadow King, or maybe like this kid that died in here is, like, I don't know. It's just kind of weird in that way. And like there's a lot of course you have the traditional trope of the school and everything here. And like someone, oh, they don't fit in and that type of thing. And the costumes and everything. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that type of thing. But then it gets like, it's just, I don't know. I guess I wasn't expecting it to be surprisingly dark.
Hmm.
Like I wouldn't say like it's like Junji Ito or anything, but I mean, like, they're like, oh, some kid gets bullied, and they're like, oh, that kid died, and then later on, someone hangs themselves? I was just like, oh, I didn't know this was that type of comic, like...
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely worth my attention. And I don't know, maybe if someone's looking for... I wouldn't say this is necessarily, like, the... Oh, because it reads so differently and it is so different, I wouldn't necessarily say it's like that, the one character, slow, open, we're going to decompress things and we're not going to have anything happen. Like, maybe this is what the book is.
That's the feeling that I got. I didn't get as attached to it as you did and found myself not reading it anymore and more kind of just flipping through it and looking through it sequentially, taking the artwork and kind of just sort of see what was happening. But I kind of felt like, you know, is this going anywhere or is this the book, you know?
I'm also thinking of like the chapters, like sort of if this was like, this is one of the chapters you just get in one of those Shonen Jump magazines. You read this and you'd be like, cool. Like, I was also thinking of it in that way. And yeah, there's definitely some sequences where I'm just like, yeah, this is, I got to see more of this. Well, you know, when armor sort of projects that armor over themselves and grabs the shadow-like characters and then has them by the neck and their eyes are just about popping out of the socket of their shadow head with all like the webs and I don't know what you call, like all the like spider webs are like bursting out of their skull. And I'm like, that is just very nice. And I'm not usually someone that would go for something like that. Like, to me, that's more exciting and expressive for the artist to do than just saying, hey, we cut someone's stomach open and now all their innards are all over the floor. Like, this type of violence, I've been like, I'm like, I love looking at this better than that.
Yeah,
this is maybe a weird descriptor of violence, but anyhow.
Hey, whatever.
I mean, I expect more characters to show up, definitely. But I don't know how or when or if we're going to have a school or any of that stuff. And you don't really need to have any of that stuff. Hey, you can take all the Krakoa stuff and put it in this book now if they're not going to use it in the main stuff, in the main universe.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things they could do.
Yeah.
Well, that is
pretty exciting, I think.
That is a difference, Kevin. This 2099, the current one is Symbiote Spider-Man. This stuff is totally backwards looking. This is nothing cutting edge or new or anything. All this stuff is just nostalgia bait wrapped up in the modern packaging. And the funny thing is, I didn't even read 2099 when it came out.
So. See, I.
But now you're hooked.
Funny thing, like, I buy all the 2099 stuff, but I skip this one because I'm like, oh, this doesn't seem like the real one. This isn't the official one. I want to keep the vibe going. So I'm like, I don't know if I can get this one. I got to get the Orlando product.
Oh, he did so well with that one. I mean, I hated that Alpha and Omega nonsense. Just number them proper, but yeah, it was good.
Which one was that?
That was from what, 2 years ago? There were like 6 or 7 issues, yeah. But it started with an alpha and ended
And
I hated that because, you know, I'm just trying to buy the things when I go into the store, not do a bunch of translation into what the difference is. But it was fun because each one featured like the Winter Soldier of 2099,
right?
X-Men. So it was a fun scroll, Ghost Rider, stroll through the universe with Miguel as our kind of wandering MC. Yeah, it was fun. So this is Symbiote Spider-Man.
Yeah, because I don't know if everyone knows what the Alpha and Beta and all that stuff means anymore. They did another one this year, and then they're going to do another one where they're like going into outer space.
What also makes me feel like you don't know, do I need, is this like a zero issue or is this something you need? And the wrap up, you needed the end, it wasn't just some extra coda or whatever. It was part of the story. And I was just kind of irked that was how they rolled with it. Like, just put the numbering on it. Someone really like, oh, I want the alpha, but not the number one, like whatever.
Someone only buys the Alpha and the Omega.
What was the first time that Marvel did that? Was that the Age of Apocalypse that had the Alpha and the Omega? Was that the first one? Or the Death of Xavier? Or was that the same thing? Death of Xavier was Age of Apocalypse, wasn't it? Never mind. All right. So it was Age of Apocalypse. I answered my own question.
Yeah, it was probably. That's the earliest one I can think of right now. Yeah. But what about the Clone Saga? What was that one called? With the shiny end? Foil. Was that also an Omega?
That would have been after, though.
Oh,
the other.
Okay.
That would have been after time-wise, the other, I believe.
That wasn't the same year, maybe?
Yeah, that's worth checking out. I'll have
or
to
is
that
maybe
that.
That's a year later?
Anyway.
1 year later?
Yeah.
Huh.
All right, my final salvo is three quick hits from the X-Men universe. The Fall of the House of X. What are we calling it? Status Quo. Arc, era, whatever. And the first one is super quick, is the second issue of the new Cable series. It's written by the Fabster, Nicieza, with a Wills Portacio cover.
Is that what he goes by now?
And the art is Scott Eaton and Lan Medina doing the pencils. So it's a very clear, dynamic, classic storytelling. The title itself... And the last one, I don't know, it's not too hot in my book, but in this issue, Cable fights the Gray Gargoyle, which I thought was really fun because it's like two guys with their cruel Midas touch factors, right? That they can like, Cable's got the techno-organic virus arm and you know, the Gray Gargoyle, he takes off the gloves and touches something and you turn to stone. So seeing them face off was kind of fun, even though the rest of the issue was... You know, whatever. The other is Iron Man 15, 16, and 17, which is also a Fall of X book. It's written by Jerry Dugan with art by Cress Lee and Walden Wong, but old friend Patrick Zerker is on issue 17.
Whoa. I'll have to check that out. Jeez. I like the Zerch. He did that Conan story in The Savage Sword.
Oh, yeah.
Solomon Kane, but in the Savage Sword
right.
magazine.
Tony Stark finally makes his grand move against Orcus and their founder, Fei Long, who's made life miserable for Stark and the mutants this last year, and attacks his Stark Tech Sentinels that Fei Long has. He's in control of Stark Industries and everything. They have a big face-off in the Australian desert, and Iron Man has a sentinel-busting armor that's pretty cool, and it's a battle so royale that it's not even over, and it's been three issues long. And it doesn't seem like it's wasting pages, though, because this is a nice, sustained payoff to the hole that Tony's dug himself into. The whole first part of the series. So, I mean, there's ups and downs even amongst these three issues, but the overall trend is finally heading upward here as the bad guys get what's coming to them.
Now that sounds like a manga, Steve. Three issues of nothing but fights.
Yeah.
And the last is X-Force number 50, written by Benjamin Percy with art by Rob Gill. It's the final, and we mean it this time, confrontation with the Beast. You know, the Beast
is...
You
mean Dark Beast?
Yeah, he's been well on the path of becoming the Dark Beast from the Age of Apocalypse time, who coincidentally was in the Marvel Universe after the Age of Apocalypse for a while. And was had his day as a nemesis in the background. But anyway, the last, like, over a year, X-Force has been chasing this sucker down. Beast clones Beast. He's outsmarted them. He's outmaneuvered them. He's escaped. He's, you know, he's Hank McCoy. He's a smart dude, right? But one Beast clone they managed to salvage, and he's imprinted with the Beast's persona and memories from back in his days with the New Defenders. So, like, before X-Factor, even. And that Beast has run off to stop Beast Prime and recruited old pal Wonder Man along the way. So you got Beast and Wonder Man, like, from their buddy days, like, doing the Beast and Wonder Man buddy team, which is a lot of fun.
That is so weird. And I was wondering, what's Wonder Man's status quo at this point? Is he crazy? Is he a pacifist? And I'm like,
For the purposes of this story, he's just like he was the last time this beast saw him. And it works. And there's no time to get into what's going on with Simon. He's there in support of the beast and their friendship and to be played off of. But X-Force is chasing them down because they think that this beast clone is in cahoots with the Dark Beast, and that's why he escaped and is heading towards his location, because, you know, he's in cahoots. But that the beasts do meet, and it's very entertaining. It pays off. It's just fun comic booking. X-Force number 50. All right, that's it for another episode of Marvel Noise. Join us next time for more mirthful, merry marching. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Andrew, as always. Until the Beast clone and Spider clone share an ice cream clone, make mine Marvel. Later.